Rolling Stones fans in the place today? Stand up if you're a Rolling Stones fan. I was wondering what one looked like. There you go. I thought about coming out today dressed like Mick Jagger because we have the same build. You know, I think I might be a little bigger than him, though. Not in the lip area. The Rolling Stones have been around since before I was born. And I never have liked them. Mainly because of him. It's just, he scared me. I think I had nightmares about him as a baby or something. But the words to that song really define the world that we live in. We live surrounded by people. And by the way, this is not a us versus them sermon. Oh, those poor pitiful people out there. This is about us poor pitiful people in here and those poor pitiful people out there. We're all wandering around in this world looking for something to satisfy us. Even those of us who have tasted and seen that the Lord is good, we find ourselves continually having to ask, God, what is it that's supposed to satisfy me again? We talk about this topic in our new member classes. It's something that we really want our church to really get a grasp of. Because this is one of those truths that you're going to find in Scripture that's much like the words of Jesus when he said that we're supposed to deny ourselves daily and pick up our cross and follow him. Daily, moment by moment, we have to remind ourselves to go to the Lord and ask him to be everything we need him to be for us. To be satisfied in him. Because it's not a natural thing. What's natural is what you see around you. There are people that you know. One of them probably lives in your own skin. Okay? So don't look much further than yourself in this. But we all wander around wanting to fill up something in us that continually feels like it's being depleted, like the life's being pulled out of us. If you know Christ, the Spirit of God is in you and He is the river of life in you. But the Apostle Paul spent a lot of time writing to the church, imploring them, begging them, pleading with them to pray for the Spirit of God to fill them up. For them to walk in step with the Spirit. For them to hear the voice of God. He prayed for them to have eyes to see and ears to hear. And those are church people. These are people that know God, that have met Christ. They've accepted Him. He's their Lord. Think about the people who've never made that decision. And they're wandering around looking for things to satisfy them. Nobody's exempt from this. We all look for different things. Okay? And some of us, even if you're a Christian, let me just give you the permission today to be honest with yourself. Because I've been a believer for a long time. I hadn't had much sleep in the last little while, so I can't even calculate how long that's actually been. But I know this, that I still run to some of these things. I still run to them to satisfy me. And I constantly have to check myself. The first thing that people run to is money, possessions, stuff. Anybody guilty? Come on, just four of us? Yes, you are. And so am I. We just want stuff. We think stuff's going to make us happy. But you think about this. I have this picture of my children on Christmas morning. So excited. Their presents that we need to get a higher tree. You know, our tree sits about this high and presents won't go under that tree. You know, so they're all around the tree. They fill the room. And we've had to pace ourselves with our children because if we just let them dive into the presents, it would be over like that. Because we know what's going to happen immediately after the presents are over, the letdown that, oh, you mean that's all there was? I had to take out a 7-year installment loan to pay for that stuff, and you're telling me that's all it was? It's because we have an appetite that's impossible to satisfy with stuff, with money. But yet, if you watch American television, if you watch advertising, basically the message is, all you need is this. The iPhone is the latest thing. I don't understand it. It looks a lot like everything else that has that little apple on it to me. Except you can turn it sideways and the picture turns sideways, which is cool. Worth standing in line for, camping out for overnight? I don't think so. I'll wait till they get them on the clearance rack and that'll be fine for me. But it's always something. Something that's not going to satisfy you. Money, possessions. Anybody, this is way too personal, so don't raise your hand for yourself. Do you know someone who's looked for satisfaction in relationships that they're now ashamed of? I love this song. See if you remember this one. I was looking for love. Gotta make me want to put my fingers right here. You know, I'm from Texas now. If anybody wants to have an Urban Cowboy quoting contest after the service, we'll meet up here by this speaker. Not just the John Travolta character either. I know all of them. You can probably watch it tonight on TNT sometime late. It's on just about every weekend. But a great picture of the loneliness of people looking for relationships to satisfy them. And we do this in a couple of ways. Number one, we look for the wrong relationships. You know, we expect things from the wrong people. We put our faith in the wrong people. We make ourselves vulnerable to the wrong people, and we pay the price. Another thing we do with relationships is we expect the wrong things out of the right people. We give good relationships the wrong priority, and they become our gods. We start to worship our children, and we start to worship our spouses. We worship family. We worship a lot of things around relationships. And we set those relationships up to be dissatisfying, to be unsatisfying, because that's not going to fill the hole that's in you. There are others of us that are thrill seekers. We're pleasure seekers. We're hedonists. That's the big word for it that just says we go all out for pleasure. See if this sounds familiar. I went skydiving. I went Rocky Mountain climbing. I hit 2.7 seconds on a full moon Fu Manchu. I just love to say Fu Manchu for some reason. Let's just say it together. Fu Manchu. Come on, you can do it. You spoke foreign. You spoke in tongues at Whitestone Church today. I hope that's not like some like obscenity in a foreign language, because I really have no idea. How many of you ever jumped out of an airplane? Larry Israel, he's done everything. He is my hero. I was talking to a guy in the Air Force this week when I was in Texas, and he told me he was in the Air Force, and I said, you know, how cool, do you jump out of airplanes? And he looked at me like I was the stupidest person in the world and said, why would somebody want to jump out of a perfectly good airplane? He worked on fire trucks. Joined the Air Force to do fire truck maintenance. I don't know how you get there. I'm sure there's a story there. But pleasure, thrill, the rush. You know, a lot of us are just looking for something, just something, anything, to make the time go by. Because when we're not occupied, we hear the silence and it scares us. There are others of us that are motivated by power, prestige, position. Some of us, knowledge. Any academics in here that just, you just like school? If you are Pat Haney, if you're here, oh, I see you ducking down back there. There are some people that just enjoy school, enjoy learning. Not so much me. It's like one of those things I always had to do. And I've asked God, since I got out of school, to give me an appetite to read and to study, because I was so burned out on it. But there's some people, and if you go to the Northeast, this is prevalent. If you go up in the Ivy League around in there, you're judged by the number of initials you have after your name. And they're looking to that to satisfy them. Some people look to church. You notice I didn't say God, but they look to church or religion. We're in the Bible Belt, and everybody's got a church. But guess what? Not everybody knows God. Because church is one of the things Jesus came and he preached against the most. It was the religious leaders that he stood up against, because they were trying to be satisfied by the law. They were trying to be satisfied by ritual. They were trying to be satisfied by the appearance of God and not God Himself. Well, when none of that works, if that doesn't get you, if none of that's satisfying you, or if you haven't found your vice of choice in there, when all else fails, sometimes we just self-medicate with drugs or with alcohol or the Christian drug of choice, food. This is going to turn into a gluttony sermon here in just a second. And then it's amazing that I've grown up in the church and I've heard probably, I don't know, a couple hundred sermons on drug and alcohol abuse, and the fat preacher's always the first one in line at the potluck dinner right after, and gluttony is never mentioned. It's just not one of the big ones that we wear the scarlet letter on our chest for, but it's something we use to medicate ourselves. People sit at home alone late at night and eat because they just want something to numb the pain. It all goes back to the same thing. Are you satisfied with your life? There's a question I want to ask you today, and I want to just put everything we say in this context. Are you satisfied with your life today? Are you satisfied? I'm 41 years old. I'll be 42 next month. My wife just turned 40. So we've had a lot of those kind of, you know, conversations. Is it all we thought it would be? For the most part, we think being a grown-up is overrated. Especially lately, we think being a kid's not that bad a thing. Grown-up problems, grown-up issues are not a lot of fun most of the time. But you don't think about that when you're 15 and all you want is your driver's license. And then you start praying for Jesus not to come back yet because you want to go to the prom. I never did that. Girls pray that, I hear. I want to join a fraternity. I want to go to college. You know, as you experience more and more of the big things that life offers, at least I do, pray more and more fervently, Jesus, come back now, please. Because if you put your expectation in any event in this world, you're going to be disappointed. Because there's only one that can satisfy you. Think about it. Am I satisfied with my life today? Am I satisfied? This is not a new phenomenon. We're going to look at the word from the book of Ecclesiastes this morning. And this is written by Solomon, the son of David, the wisest man that ever walked around on this earth apart from Jesus. And he had an opportunity that none of us will likely ever have. And that is the opportunity to have everything that this life affords, to try it all. And he did that. And we're going to read starting in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 1. This is Solomon speaking. I thought in my heart, come, now I will test you with pleasure and find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is foolish. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men to do under heaven during the few days of their lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs of water groves for flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired men and women singers and a harem as well, the delights of the heart of man. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. Yet, when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Solomon is a man who had everything. And the thing I admire about Solomon is he decided, if I'm doing this, I'm all in. I'm going in with everything. I'm not going to deny myself anything. If he's going to be the case study for, is there anything in this world that can really satisfy the soul of a man or a woman? I think it's a good thing that he was all there. He denied himself nothing. He bought everything he wanted. He had everything he desired. And at the end, he found it was meaningless. And you can look all through history. Rich people who end up lonely, miserable, and die unhappy men. You can watch the History Channel today, and you'll probably see three stories that have similar characteristics. You could watch Entertainment Tonight, and you'll see the latest Lindsay Lohan story, or the latest about Paris Hilton. Has she got her voice lowered yet? Y'all heard that, right? Do you watch Larry King? Are you awake? You know that Paris Hilton found God when she was in jail. You saw this, right? And Larry King was interviewing Paris and asked her, well, what's different about Paris, the new Paris that's found God? What would you want to change about Paris? And to which Paris responded, well, sometimes when I get nervous, my voice gets really high and squeaky. I really want to work on lowering my voice. If that's the biggest change that you can come away with by encountering Almighty God, you didn't meet God. If someone were to ask you, after you just spent a month reading the Bible and you found God, what's your favorite Bible verse? If your only response you can give is, I really like them all, then we're probably talking about a pretty shallow pool. Rich, unsatisfied people. The only difference between Paris and us is she has more money. Many of us walk around the same way, just looking to be satisfied by reputation or what people think of us or how our voice sounds, our appearance. It's a really sad way to live. Solomon went on, and he said this. I think I figured it out. If you flip over to one chapter in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, he summed up why men and women are so frustrated. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 10, he said this, I've seen the burden God has laid on men. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He's also set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. Let me say that again in my words. God put eternity in the hearts of men, but he didn't give them the capacity to understand what that meant. In other words, you have an eternity-shaped hole in your heart. And you're trying to fill it with temporary earthly things. Does that make sense? Genesis 1:27 says that God created men and women in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Could it be that the image of God that's put into each one of us is that eternal part of us, our soul, that part that will never die, the part that will spend eternity either with God or separated from God? That's the eternal part of us. It's a God-shaped hole. It can only be filled by God. And yet, we walk around looking for love in all the wrong places. We walk around looking to fill up our bank accounts and our homes with stuff. And we wonder why it's never satisfying for more than a moment. And we constantly fight this battle because there's an eternal part of us that can only be filled by God that we're trying to fill with other things. You ever had a conversation that you wish you could have, but you can't have now because it's too late? This is one of those conversations for me. And hopefully this will spur you to have a conversation before it's too late for you. Some of you know, a lot of you don't even know me if you're a guest here because I've been gone for about a month. But I don't usually do this. I'm usually back there. I'm Mark, the worship pastor. Scott's on vacation this week. I was on sabbatical for the month of June. And it started out gloriously. Did a lot of nothing. And it was beautiful, and I think God smiled a lot. But I think it was a lot of that was to prepare me for what the latter half of the month was going to look like. because my sister, who's 4 years older than me, was killed in an automobile accident on June 24th in Texas. And it was a horrible thing. She has two kids, an 18-year-old daughter and an 11-year-old little boy. My sister lived a really hard life. She was 45 years old, but she'd made 90 years worth of mistakes. And we were never really that close. I think she was happy to have a brother in the ministry that lived in another state. A lot of you who are my friends think that doesn't sound all bad. Wouldn't mind being your friend from another state. I'm easier to get along with that way. It was kind of like that with my sister. And so there were a lot of conversations that I would have loved to have that we just never had. The last conversation I did have with Deanne was a spiritual conversation. She was trying to find a church that had a preacher that spoke in a language she could understand, because she just never understood anything that was said at church. And we started a conversation that we never finished. My encouragement to you today would be to look around you, to find people in your life who are not satisfied with their life, and tell them the things that God puts on your heart to tell them. I would entitle the rest of this talk a conversation that I never had. Because my sister looked to all these other things. She looked to money and relationships and pleasure and drugs and alcohol. And she looked to all those things to satisfy herself. And the one thing I never said clearly enough to her was, there's so much more. The sad thing about your life and the way it's turning out is it doesn't have to be that way. There is so much more. There is a God that is so satisfying that when you experience Him, you'll lose your appetite for those things. Maybe there's someone in your life that you need to have that conversation with. Not to say, you need to start going to church. Who needs something else to do? I mean, aren't we busy enough? People don't want to be invited to church. They want to be invited to life. They want to be invited into something that's big enough to live in. They want to be invited into something that's satisfying. I said this a couple of weeks ago. My sister was not a bad person. She made all kinds of bad choices. But you know what? That's what we all do. Where does sin come from? Because the problem that we all share is a sin problem. Nobody had to teach us how to do it. We were born that way. If you read the story of Adam and Eve, it describes the fall of man, and every person that's walked on this earth apart from Jesus Christ has struggled with the same problem, and it's sin. Where does sin come from? Flip over to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, because this is where it starts for all of us. James chapter 1. James says this in verse 14. Where does sin come from? But each one is tempted when, by his own evil desire, he is dragged away and enticed. Then, after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it's full grown, gives birth to death. Here's a picture of sin for us. The things that you want are not sin, okay? The things that you desire. You see a new truck, you want that new truck. That's not sin. It says when your evil desires. It says each one is tempted by his own evil desire. He is dragged away and enticed. How it works for us is we're looking to be satisfied. We all are. We've already talked about that. And we have a desire, something that we think will satisfy us. But we're looking in the wrong place. And so that makes that desire an evil desire. And that desire, the more you think about it, anybody ever been in this situation? You decide you want something, you can't stop thinking about it. I mean, everything, every waking minute, you start thinking about how am I going to do this? How am I going to juggle this to pay for this? We all do it in our own way. That's a process of dragging you away and enticing you. It's like a hook on a lure. Okay, you haven't taken that lure yet. You're not hooked yet, but you're slowly being dragged away, and you're about to be hooked. And when you are, then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. That's when sin happens. And the natural outcome of sin is death. Romans 3:23 says the wages of sin is death. Romans 6:23 says we've all done it. We've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. This desire in you that you're trying to fulfill in some other way, the natural course, the only way that's going to turn out is death for you. I'll tell you three things that I heard a long time ago that have always stuck with me about sin. Because some of you are dabbling with it right now. Some of you are walking a line thinking, I can control this. Three things you can take away from this passage. Number one, sin always takes you further than you want to go. It's always going to take you further. This much will satisfy you today. Tomorrow it's going to take a little more. So you're going to have to take another step. It's always going to take you farther. Second thing is, it's always going to keep you longer than you want to stay. You're going to get entangled in it. That's why Paul says, cast off all that sin that entangles us, that keeps us from running the race that God put out for us. It always takes you farther than you want to go. It keeps you longer than you want to stay. And it costs more than you're going to be able to afford. The price is going to be too high. Because it ends in death. It starts with a desire to be satisfied. And it ends up in death. If my sister could stand before you today, she would say much more clearly than I'm saying right now, shake yourself before it's too late. There's so much more out there. There's so much more that can satisfy you. I'm not talking about being guilted into anything. I'm not talking about a list of rules for people to lord over your life and tell you how to live. I'm talking about the only way in this earth to really be satisfied in that eternal part of you that God created that can only be filled by Himself. So, guys, you can spend your whole life trying to be satisfied other ways. But you're not going to, it's not going to be, it's nothing you can consume. Consumption's not going to get it. Acquisition is not going to get it. Accumulation, just getting more stuff, it's not going to satisfy you. Your occupation, getting that dream job, it's not going to satisfy you. Domination or control, just getting control of your life, getting all your ducks in a row. Those ducks have a way of getting a mind of their own. You're not going to be able to control it. It's not going to satisfy you. A denomination or a church affiliation is not going to satisfy you. Relationship with Jesus Christ. That river we talked about, that we sang about, that's the only thing that'll satisfy you. If I could talk to my sister today, I would beg her to consider Jesus. Not to start going to church. Because to be honest with you, there are a lot of churches I think they don't hold up Jesus. Consider Jesus. All through the New Testament, the same thing happened over and over again. You know how you find satisfaction? Through surrender. Through giving up. You can't charge the hill and take satisfaction. You get satisfaction by laying down and letting Christ live His life through you. And then His joy becomes your joy. It's not driven by circumstance. If it was, guys, if it was driven by circumstance, I would probably break into a cussing fit up here in front of you this morning. I'm surprised I don't have sores breaking out of my body because of the last couple of weeks of my life. It's just one thing after another. But in all that, I hear God saying, I'm good. And your joy is safe because I am the unfailing one. When I fall, He picks me up. When you fall, you don't pick yourself up. He picks you up. He's the only one that can satisfy you. If you would, flip over to John chapter 4. And I want to just talk about one lady that met Christ and experienced this. And As I read this passage about the woman at the well, Jesus and the Samaritan woman, there are remarkable resemblances to the life of my sister and the life of this lady. There might be remarkable similarity between this lady and someone that you know very well. We won't go through the whole story, but basically in John 4, starting in the fourth verse, it says, now he had to go through Samaria, he being Jesus. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about the sixth hour. So Jesus is traveling through this town. There's a well there where people came to draw water. Jesus is thirsty. He sits down and he meets a Samaritan woman. Jesus is a Jew. There's not a natural conversation that's going to take place between these people because culturally they're always at odds. But Jesus speaks to this woman and he asks her, will you give me a drink? His disciples had gone into town to buy food. So Jesus was alone with this woman. The Samaritan woman said to him, you're a Jew. I'm a Samaritan. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews did not associate with Samaritans. Jesus answered her, if you knew the gift of God and who it was that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. Modern day East Tennessee paraphrase. If you knew who I was, you'd be asking me for a drink. I have the only thing that'll satisfy you. There are people walking around and they think they know where to get the drink that'll satisfy. But the only one that gives the drink is the one that's being ignored. He's the only one that can satisfy. And he's the one that they walk by day after day. Sir, the woman said, you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as also his herds, his flocks? Jesus answered, everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become a spring of water welling up to eternal life. Sound familiar to anybody? I have a river of life flowing inside of me and it never runs dry. You didn't put that river in you. That river is a gift that Jesus offers all who believe in him. And he's the supplier. He's the one. You ever wondered, where does spring water come from anyway? We camped this last week by a natural spring in Texas and it shot out like 7 million gallons of water a second. Every second of the day. I'm thinking, where does this water come from? There's a supplier that has an infinite supply of water, living water, that can satisfy you. Much bigger than any spring we're going to find here. And it's not dependent upon your circumstance. It's dependent upon you surrendering. You letting go of control of your life. And letting some things die in you. Letting some dreams die in you so that he can raise up some bigger dreams. So he can give you something to live for. Well, the woman said, sir, would you give me this water? That's really our only part to play in the whole salvation experience, is accepting it. When it's offered, when Jesus says, hey, you want some of this water? You want some of this life that'll never end? The only part you play in it is saying, mm-hmm, please give me that water. Jesus told her, go call your husband and come back. And so she left. And when she came back, skip down to verse 28. Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to town and said to the people, come and see a man who told me everything I ever did. There's a man who knows everything that you've ever done. Everything. And he still offers you life. But you have to be willing to surrender to get it. You have to be willing to lay down all these other things that you think satisfy you. And then you'll find that he is satisfying. John 10:10 says that he came that we might have life, abundant life, and life to the full. And in Matthew 11, Jesus said, come to me, all who are weak. Put that verse up there, Cody. Matthew 11, 28 through 30. This might be an invitation to some of you today. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Just think for just a second. Could there be anything more satisfying than a soul at rest? Is there anybody else here like me that just hates it when you finally get to the end of the day, you've worked your tail off all day, you've done all you know to do, and the mind still won't turn off? It feels like your soul's just not at rest. There's a peace that passes all understanding that Jesus promises will guard our hearts and give us rest for our souls. The reason my sister lived the life she lived was because she never accepted that invitation to come to me. If you're weak, just come to me. I'm not going to beat you up. I don't want to scold you. You're my child and I love you. Would you come? Don't do this to yourself anymore. That's the word of the Lord for you today. Stop doing this to yourself, because there's a life, an abundant, beautiful life that's there. I created it in advance for you. It's for you. It's there. Would you take it? It will satisfy you like nothing else can. As we were driving, this week we went to Texas again. And we were pulling a little travel trailer behind us and blew a bearing driving across Texas, and the wheel just about fell off and we almost all went to our fiery death, but it didn't happen. There were times this week where I thought, God, that would actually be a relief, because it was hot and it was rainy and it was miserable. And we had to spend 2 days in Columbus, Texas, waiting for a part to get there. And drove 2,500 miles in less than a week. And with, you know, a big trailer attached to a little minivan that wasn't really built for that. But there was a spiritual moment in that I was thinking about it as I was driving back. And I looked back at my children who were in the back seat. Every one of them just asleep, just out. And I'm thinking, the roads in Arkansas are so bad. There were times I thought I wasn't on the road. I mean, I think we went Dukes of Hazzard a few times just going over overpasses. It was horrible. And every time I did it, it was my fault. And she'd wake up, what are you doing? Because she was a little nervous because we had near-death experiences and she doesn't trust me anyway. But the kids never stirred. Never stirred. And I thought, what a beautiful picture. What a beautiful picture of surrender. They had no idea that every time an 18-wheeler passed me, the steering wheel went like this as it tried to blow me off the road for 21 hours straight. And when I got done, it's the only time driving ever, and I've made this drive a lot, only time ever I had cramps in my fingers from holding the steering wheel so tight. They slept. They had surrendered control. They weren't worried about it. They trusted their Father. Maybe the trust was misplaced, you know. Because there were times that I wasn't so sure about it. But they didn't question. There's a Father that will never let you down, that you can trust with the journey of your life. You can just curl up and you can sleep. You can let your soul rest because you know He holds it securely. That's a satisfaction. That's a gift. It's not my idea. It's what Jesus said is available to you today. The Apostle Paul knew about it. He wrote about it in Philippians when he said, I've learned to be content no matter what my situation. Whether I'm rich or poor, well-fed or hungry, I've learned to be content. I've learned the secret. But he doesn't, in that passage in Philippians 4, he doesn't tell you what the secret is. He just said, I learned it. He actually said it earlier. If you go back a chapter earlier in Philippians 3, the secret is knowing Christ, being found in Him. It makes me content, even when in a month's time I lost a sister and an aunt, and Friday night my wife's father had triple bypass surgery, almost had a massive heart attack. And all the other calamities that's just my story. We could make a list and we could start sending it around and we would shock ourselves at the things that are right there on our radar screen today, they're brightly there, and tomorrow they'll be gone. But the love of God will never fail. He's the same. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. Knowing Him, that's where satisfaction is going to come today. Would you stop doing it to yourself? Maybe today's the day that you just surrender. You wave the white flag. You give up control. And you say, God, I just want to receive what You have. It's a satisfying life. Drink it. You'll never be thirsty again. Oh, there'll be days when you wonder, can I do this again? But He's the one who keeps you from falling. My invitation to you today is if you've never tasted, may today be the day. Maybe today's the day to die to some stuff, to surrender, to accept the invitation to come to Me. If you're weak, if you're tired, if you're disillusioned, if you're cynical, if you're so depressed you don't know how you're going to get out of bed tomorrow, there's an answer, and it's not in a pill bottle. He's big enough to help you overcome any addiction you have. See, that's the problem. I think we misdefine addiction with habit. I think we go back to the same thing over and over again, and then we claim that we're addicted to it when we've just never tasted anything any better. There's something better. And when you taste it, just like the old hymn says, when you turn your eyes upon Jesus and look full in His wonderful face, the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of His glory and grace. There's a life that's bigger and it's better. And today, you still have a chance to do something about that. People around you that you love still have a chance to do something about that today. Take advantage of today. Let's pray together.